Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Time. It's the one commodity that we have that is, along with intelligence, perhaps the most important thing that determines our success or lack thereof. Although the older I get, the more I think that perhaps luck plays a bigger role than I would like to acknowledge. But certainly, without question, time matters. And so, I thought I would devote the first segment of the show to a short course on time management. It better be short, lest I be accused of hypocrisy. So, let's get started. But I don't want to take a simplistic approach. A simplistic approach would give you a bunch of tips, and that's nice. But in preparing for this show, I realize that not everyone is motivated to be a better time manager. And most often, they're less motivated to be a time manager than they otherwise would because, in plain English, their life sucks. They say, it's not going to matter that much, so I manage my time better. So I cram 10 hours into an 8-hour day. It's not going to be, my life's not going to change that much anyway. It's not like that's going to really make the big difference. So before I get to tips and tricks and, you know, the tactics of how to better manage your, how to better manage your time, ask yourself, do you first need to increase the chances that your life is worth making the effort to manage your time better? Now, obviously, that's a, you know, I can't address that in a few minutes here, but in a very time-effective way to do it, I'll ask you a few questions. If you think your life does desperately need improvement before it can get to the stage where you really want to, you care enough to manage your time well, what one or two doable yet important things could you do to improve your work situation, romantic life, your health? For example, even though the job market's lousy, is it time to tell your boss to take this job and shove it? Is it time to tell your romantic partner to stop being a nag or else? To lose those extra 20 pounds that are making you feel like crap? To even basic stuff like make sure you're getting those 7 hours of sleep so you're not dragging all day? Or if you've got, you know, quote, issues that you can't handle yourself, is it time to see a counselor or maybe even just see a friend regularly or even take meds to address your depression, your anxiety, bipolar, whatever? You know, sometimes people know what they need to do. They just need to kind of take a step back, which hopefully this little segment of the radio show is helping you do. You pick something and just commit to doing it. And, yeah, tell others of the commitment. Okay. So that's the precursor to caring enough to deal with time management. Now let's assume you're motivated to improve your time management. So now I'm going to give you a buffet of options. My goal would be if you just simply pick one or two out of this buffet, it may help your time management enough that it was worth this 5 or 10 minutes of this segment of the show to have listened. Again, I don't want to be hypocritical and be time ineffective. So okay, first one, and this one is also in a way, somewhat a little bit of a prerequisite. But unless you embrace the primacy of productivity, as opposed to having fun, you're not going to care to manage your time well enough because your core value is, well, I just want to have fun. Now, I'm aware that with 7 billion people on the planet, none of us are likely to make that much difference. But whatever meaning our life has, it seems to me what's core to that is how productive we are. I mean, I could spend my as much time as possible watching comedies, listening to my favorite tunes on my MP3 player, but the world will be no better for my presence. I mean, frankly, it would be right now, it would be more fun for me to play with my doggy Einstein than even talking with you on the show, although I certainly don't dislike talking with you. But my life feels more worthwhile because I was productive in preparing for the show. I'm doing the show. I'm working. That feels better. I don't want to be asking myself, well, where did the day go? Or let alone, where did the years go? I want to be one of those people who feels I'm making good use of my time. I'm living a life well led. So the first, maybe I guess it is another prerequisite to being even open to tactics about time management, is to decide that you are going to embrace a greater level of productivity in your life, that that matters to you, that that means that is the life well led. Because if you're merely a hedonist, if you're a pleasure seeker, no, you're going to sit, you're going to get stoned all day, you're going to listen to music, you're going to have sex, you're going to eat, you're going to play with your dog, you're going to stare at nature. And then you're not going to be motivated to be more time, you know, manage time better. Okay, one more kind of a prerequisite. Boy, I keep coming up with these prerequisites, but they're critical to time management. If I just give you a bunch of these little tips and tricks, I feel that's shortchanging you. So I'll get to the tips and tricks, but first, and this is not a new concept, but a critical one. You need to have a personal mission statement, because then you can set some goals that are consistent with those with your personal mission statement. And then you'll be more motivated to manage your time well to meet those goals. But it needs to start, like Stephen Covey once said, with that personal mission statement. Okay, here's mine. It's to use my coaching skills, my writing skills, and my speaking skills to try to improve people's lives, especially career, but not necessarily career, and also to use those skills to improve education. No, not improve education, reinvent education. Education's beyond tweaks, and it needs reinvention. So that's my personal mission statement. You use my coaching, writing, and speaking skills to improve people's lives, especially around career, and to reinvent education. So once I've got that, then I can set some goals. What am I going to try to do to achieve all those things? For example, I've just funded a small little mini pilot that's going to test the idea of having a dream team of teachers online teach Algebra 1 for a week instead, and replace the standard homework assignment that kids blow off with that. And then I'm going to be funding a little evaluation to see whether it makes a difference. So that's a goal that I've created that is very consistent with my personal mission statement, that because it is, I'm much more interested in being a great time manager. So you can see how these prerequisites are key to making you want to do the time management tactics. So number one, as we said, make sure your life is in good enough shape that you feel like being a good time manager is going to help. And then two, embrace the whole concept of a more productive life being more key to a life well led. And then three, develop a personal mission statement and then goals that follow from that. That seems to me sets the stage for you then being motivated to implement these time management tactics that I'm now going to deliver for you. Okay, first one of the tactics is, like, I remember Jiminy Cricket, I think it was, who sat on some cartoon, Walt Disney, some cartoon character's shoulder, whispering, he's kind of the wise guy whispering in his ear. I'd like you, especially, you know, if you're time conscious like me, you don't need to do it because you're always thinking about time. But if you are somebody who's wondering, where did the time go, then, and you're not efficient particularly, pretend you've got this little cricket, this Jiminy Cricket on your shoulder, always whispering to you, is this a time-effective approach? Is this a time-efficient approach, whatever? So, for example, the voice should be asking you, you know, after that voice is asking you in your ear, is this a time-efficient approach? You might, let's say you're, for example, you've got to write a report. Then you might say to yourself, oh, you know, I was planning to do 5 interviews to get the information for that report, but maybe the most time-efficient use of my time is to do a good Google search. Or maybe instead of having an in-person meeting, and I recognize that there is a chemistry and an importance to sometimes having an in-person meeting, but might you be wiser to simply get the team's input by sending them an email? So having that little voice, that Jiminy Cricket in your ear, making you be time aware, asking you, is this time efficient? Is this a good use of your time? Use whatever words you want. That's critical, maybe the most important. Another one, I've mentioned this a lot of times on the radio before, but this is so, it's also so critical to time management as a tactic. And it actually is a corollary of this the notion of having the little voice in your ear saying, is this time effective? Ask yourself if you want to get rid of some of the big time sucks from your life. I mean, maybe you really do feel it's a good use of your time to play golf. Maybe it's you feel it is a good use of your time to frequently have pity parties with your friends who are just despondent. Maybe you feel it is a good use of your time to have a standing date with that sitcom you like, or five sitcoms you like. Maybe you do think it's a good use of your time to traipse to Topeka for your Uncle Gomer's third wedding. Maybe you do think it's a good use of your time to once a month spend a $300 day at a day spa. Maybe you think it's a good use of your time to try to finally understand Ulysses. I've given up. Maybe you think it's a good use of your time to stare at athletes that are pumped up on steroids throwing a ball around for 3 hours, including 2 hours of commercials. Maybe you think it's a good use of your time to stuff your face for 8 days and seven nights on the cruise ship Il Stupendo. Maybe you think it's a good use of your time. Every time a famous celebrity dies and I see thousands of people, you know, lining up a day in advance for their funeral, some rock star or even politician, I ask, is that really a good use of their time? Is it really a good use of your time to file a lawsuit against that son of a bitch? The time and strain usually is not. Yet millions of us do all of those things without really consciously evaluating whether really that is the wisest use of that most precious commodity we have, especially as we get older, our time. Another tip, another tactic. You know what I'm going to do also? I'm going to invite you to call. If you've got a time management problem, let's say your boss is telling you to do all this stuff and you're not able to get it done and you don't know what to do, or you've got a big second shift, you're taking care of four children and or two grandchildren or an ailing person and you've also got a job and whatever, and you're looking for some kind of guidance on how to streamline it all, how to wring 9 hours out of an eight-hour day, I welcome your call. You're listening to Work with Marty Nemco, and the phone number here for a bit of timely advice is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay, more tips, and now we're into the tips and tricks phase of time management. Outsource. Companies do it all the time. They do it to save money, and you can do it to save money and time. You can outsource anything from your laundry to your errands, from writing stuff to webmastering. And all you need to do is, you know, place an ad in Craigslist or find somebody who's a friend of yours who's everybody these days, everybody's looking for work. Somebody you trust, somebody you like. Pay them a reasonable, you know, to use the term living wage, 10 to 15 bucks an hour. And you're worth more than 10 or 15 bucks an hour for your time. It frees you up to do all kinds of things, including have fun or do more important work. Or, you know, I've mentioned this before on the radio. I love, you know, I've used Odesk and Elance. They have thousands of people. Odesk.com and Elance.com have thousands of people who are highly, they have them rated. All their previous employers who are eager to do these part-time jobs, 10 bucks an hour or so or less. You can find people who have the exact skill set you want who have been highly rated by previous employers. You know, some of them are in India, some of them are here, and, you know, they can be anywhere. But anytime you hire somebody, even for a few hours a week, that frees you up to do things that are more important, that's the best use of your money. Every time I see a woman walk down the street with a Coach purse, I laugh. She spent $300 on that or more. How much better a use of her time would it have been to take that $300, hire somebody for $12 an hour, that gets them, you know, 20, 25 hours of time that she could have used much more productively than walking around with a stupid, somebody's with a purse with the brand name emblazoned all over it. I'm always laughing at that. Why people would spend more money so they can be a walking commercial for some jeans brand or whatever. Or anyway, you get the point. Okay. So outsourcing. Great, great way to save money. Another tip that's certainly true, and it's, you know, one of the nice things about doing this radio show is I've gotten over the 24 years to talk to, you know, incredible people. And I actually talked with a guy who was the founder of Fast Company, who ended up not appearing on the show, but we did a pre-interview. And I asked him this question. I said, you know, as the founder of Fast Company, you've gotten a chance to interview the most successful people in Silicon Valley and outside of Silicon Valley. Are there common denominators among them? And he said, yes. He said, most of them, not all, most of them live by the philosophy of ready, not ready, aim, fire, but ready, fire, aim. They do a little thinking, they try something out, and then they readjust. So a great time management tip, and that really comports with the experiences I've had with so many of my clients, my own personal experiences, I word it this way. Analyze less, act more. Analysis paralysis is not only is it terribly draining, but it really is a formula for failure. You got people who spend all this time planning and writing these long, long business plans and analyzing the data before they try anything, and they're less likely to do well, both because you can't plan it all out in advance. It's like a planned economy is doomed to failure because there's too many factors in the empirical world to have a planned economy work. It's also true in business planning. You're spending so much time on something where without some practical trying out experience, it's usually not going to work. So analyze less, act more is a great way to save time. Okay, another tip. I'll give it the phone number again. If you have, I'm going to broaden it too. If you have a problem in managing time, you don't know where your days go, where your life is going, or more broadly, if you want what I used to call for so many years here on the show, I called it a 3-minute career makeover. I think it's a little catchier to call it a workover. The bottom line is if you have need any help regarding your work life, directly related to your work life or indirectly, sometimes a personal problem can get in the way, I invite you to call. I can usually help you take at least a baby step forward and often a bigger step than that. The phone number here for a 3-minute career makeover or workover, whatever you like to call it, or especially if you've got a question about time or you've got your own favorite time management tip you'd like to share, all of those reasons are good reasons to call. And the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Okay, next tip. When you've got a task that's less than 5 minutes long, don't put it on your to-do list. Usually it's smarter to just do it. Because that's going to keep your to-do list short enough that it doesn't overwhelm you into inertia and procrastination. And very often, if you get a task done right away, let's say you return somebody's call or email right away, they're impressed. In this era where, you know, non-response is the usual response to people's emails, you know, if you are somebody who is responsive, you're going to gain a lot of respect in people's eyes. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What is your question or comment?
Is this me?
It is.
Hey, Marty, how are you? This is Sarah calling from the peninsula.
Hi, Sarah.
And I just wanted to share with our listeners what a really good time management tip for me has been.
Good.
There is a website called TaskRabbit.
Oh, yeah.
All one word, www.taskrabbit.com.
Right. Tell us.
It's staffed, not staffed, but people who are sort of underemployed. Check the website daily. People who have tasks that need done, whether it's picking up something from UPS or whether it's whatever position it is, whether it's assembling furniture for IKEA, whatever it is, people who have jobs can post on the TaskRabbit website what the job is. And underemployed people who are the TaskRabbits actually bid what they would do that job for. So the one who's posted the job can choose between the capable responders and what they would do the job for. I have offloaded new stuff in my life through this TaskRabbit website. And I can't speak, I speak so highly of it.
It makes a lot of sense, and it's a good complement for the more technical, computer-centric tasks. That's why I mentioned Odesk, and Elance. But for the more in-person, hands-on, it certainly, from the employer's standpoint, from your standpoint, TaskRabbit makes a lot of sense, and I'm delighted that you called. But I feel now, from my socially conscious side, you know, there's a part of me that feels really sad for the worker. Because the worker is, you know, he's in a complete free market auction. And you know, I'm not some wild lefty who believes in socialism. But, you know, what ends up happening is these, as you say, these underemployed folks are bidding all against each other. It's kind of a race to the bottom, and they end up doing the work for, like, minimum wage or something like that. Is that accurate? No, I have not been on TaskRabbit. Does that comport with your experience?
So yes and no. Yes, I know you're not some crazy lefty person. And the answer is, it's true. That is one of the effects of this website, is it's true. It does have underemployed people who are working and probably earning less than their capacity. That said, I actually hired somebody to help me out with cooking to save my time on weekends, because I work 50-hour weeks, and this helped get my meals prepared for the week. Mm-hmm. And this was a woman who had her own business. It's completely different, but she wasn't working full-time. It wasn't generating full-time work for her. Mm-hmm. She was able to offload some of my chores in terms of cooking and meal preparation. She was not the least expensive TaskRabbit who bid on my job. But because she was my age and she had experience cooking in her life, she was more expensive, but she was also more worthy to me because I had a sense that she had the skill set to be able to help me out. So even though people bid on the position on the job for less for that would have been less expensive for me, I chose the more expensive option. Because I trusted that she would be able to do the job. I had to eat the meals. I wasn't going to eat the meals.
Can I ask you, overall, if you've used it many times, what would you say the average amount actually per hour that the person earned among all the people you've hired?
Well, that's a good question, because they've been for different tasks. I can't really answer that question. For me, I think the lady who was helping me cook was probably making $20 an hour. I think it probably worked out to be about $20 an hour for her.
Okay. Now the free market side of me says, look, you know, people should be, nobody's twisting your arm. If you if you want to make $5 an hour doing something fun, we do a lot of things for no money. We volunteer, we play ball, we do all kinds of things for no money. And if somebody's offering you $5 an hour to do something you'd find fun anyway, or that you really need that money and nobody else will hire you, you shouldn't be prohibited from doing that. So I'm not generally, I'm a fan of what I call cushioned capitalism, basically free market with a basic safety net. You know, I am not against TaskRabbit. I just like to present both sides of it. I thank you very much for the call.
You're welcome, and keep up the good work.
Yeah, and I may indeed use TaskRabbit.
check it out. It's www.taskrabbit.com. I don't work for them. I don't have anything to do with them. I just found them to be a useful tool.
Very good.
So check it out.
I will.
Hey.
And,
bye,
you know,
take care.
I will say that even if I used it, I mean, I really do this. And I think that even, let's say I get somebody at TaskRabbit and I choose somebody and they're the best bidder or the best quality of bid and quality of the person is $12, $10 an hour. If I feel the person has done a good job, I feel like $10 an hour is not really a livable wage. And so I usually give a tip. So they end up making $15 an hour or something that feels a little better. So you might want to do that. All right, I'll give out the phone number again. If you have either a question about time management, or you have any work-related problem on which you'd like a three-minute workover, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go back to the phones, I do want to offer another tip or two. We're talking time management tips, and I want to make sure I get to all of those within this segment. This is one that's a nice, easy one that everybody seems to like. Have a sponge activity. This is an activity you can use to sponge up otherwise wasted time. And we all have lots of dead time, like on if we're on BART, or I'm standing in line at Trader Joe's, or I'm waiting in the doctor's office, or even if I were watching TV, the commercials are endless. So I'm always keeping an article, a book, or right now I'm pulling out of my pocket, I'm just holding it up to show Joanne, a memo pad. I keep a memo pad with me all the time. Why? Whenever I'm waiting, I think about whatever project I'm working on, and I take notes. It's great thinking time. So having a good sponge activity is something that's is really a good idea. Okay, one more tip, and then we got all these lines are lighted up. I will get back to the phones. This is a little bit of a toadying one, but you know, if, in this lousy job market, one of the keys to staying employed is to get clear on your boss's priorities for you. That'll not only help you keep your job, but you're focusing your time. Again, we're talking time management here. That can help you focus your time on what really matters. So get clear on your boss's priorities. Ask him, or her, of course. Say something like, you know, I'm working pretty hard, and I'm trying to make sure that I'm doing the things that you find most important. Can I run down kind of how I'm spending my time, and maybe we can make some readjustments? So that rather than you trying to tackle everything and work 17 hours a day, maybe if, you know, with a good conference with your boss, you may be able to work more reasonable hours and get done what really needs to get done. All right, now let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What's on your mind? Hello, it's you.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm sorry. I was just listening to you. You know, I'm 50 years old, and I was laid off. Mm-hmm. Slash terminated from my last employer. I'm a counselor, and I'm really thinking about a career makeover or a change. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine told me about your radio show, so I just wanted to hear about your three-minute makeovers.
Okay. Well, so tell me what the way it works is you're going to tell me a few little, you're going to take, you know, 20 or 30 seconds, and just tell me a few nuggets, some things that are core to who, not necessarily what, who you've been, although that can count. Are you still there with me? Or have I lost you? I've lost you. Okay, well, hopefully she'll call back. Feel free to do that. Let's go to the next line. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. What's on your mind? Hello?
Hello, this is George in the Mission.
Hi.
Oh, hi. Okay, great. I was just thinking about time management.
Mm-hmm.
What I always say is just work smarter, not harder, right? Let's do it one time right instead of two times. You know what I'm saying? Let alone, got alone three times. You know?
Yeah,
right?
And sometimes you can't, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, but what I was going to mention was, what also about time management is, like, you know, like, a lot of us sit around and we talk about how bad the job market is, but, like, I'm in the process of doing this. We have a lot of money sitting around here just getting stirred around, like, and, but it's not going to the right places, you know? Like, why can't some of this stuff be worker owned? You know, like, take a parking lot in San Francisco, right? You know? Those guys know what to do, and they know how to manage a parking lot because they do it every day. But why can't they... You know, instead of you paying Joe Blow $40, you know, to park there, why don't you pay that guy? You know, so that's kind of what I'm working on in Silicon Valley.
Well, I'll thank you for the call. Certainly, employee-owned businesses have been around a long time, and that is such a can of worms, such a complicated question. So, for example, let's take that parking lot. A worker there, he may know very well how to park cars, how to run and how to open and close the store. But he has no money, or she has no money. And so he doesn't have the $1 million or whatever it takes to buy a parking lot in San Francisco. I'm sure it's many millions of dollars. It's not $1 million. Should he, the worker, I mean, is this the time for the revolution to take over the, you know, the rich, greedy pigs who have the $1 million to have bought the building? Or do private property rights exist? And should people who have work to earn the money to to afford the $1 million, and maybe not their own, but they, you know, what happens is very often somebody who's got $50,000 becomes the general partner and finds 20 other people who's got $50,000 who may have been teachers or doctors or lawyers or business executives or whatever, and they pool their money and then they go and buy the parking lot. Is that an exacerbation of the gap between rich and poor, the haves and have-nots? Is this a time for the revolution, or is that just and fair? And I will leave that as an unanswered question for this topic because it is off topic right now, but I at least wanted to frame the question. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Hello?
Hello. Would that be me?
It is you.
Uh-huh. Well, so I have a huge problem with time management. I'm a primary care doctor. I work for a large nonprofit healthcare organization.
Right.
I have.
And that particular nonprofit organization feeds into it, I suspect. That I have a number of clients who are Kaiser employees, and that being not a great time manager is almost the cultural norm there.
Well, the organization is very key to time and managing every tiny detail of everything. We have an electronic medical record, and it measures everything in exquisite detail. And when you were saying earlier, find out what your boss wants, he knows exactly what he wants. Everything is measured.
You sound like you're moving, you know, so that the sound quality is not good. Is there a way you can either stand still or whatever that so that we can hear you more clearly and less annoyingly?
Is that better?
I think it is a lot better. Please go ahead.
Okay, good. Yeah, sorry. I was saying that we have an electronic medical record, and every activity we undertake is measured by the computer. And you were saying earlier that find out what your boss wants. You know, I mean, there are goals and standards for everything, and I am... I've been told that I'm the least efficient doctor in our group.
Mm.
And, you know, I really resonated with what you said earlier about, you know, think and act and analyze less. But it's hard because what I was trained to do was analyze, you know, to think. I find that what I really have to offer people is to listen to them and figure out what's really going on with them, and yet there's no time for it, and it's just a constant struggle for me to I find that just figuring out why people have come to sit in my office and what's on their minds and what needs addressing takes half of the 20 minutes that I'm allotted to see them,
mm-hmm.
and then I'm left with 10 minutes of charting a day for the 20 people I see, and, whoa, that's 200 minutes.
Okay.
And
how much of this is a lack of experience that, you know, the really good practitioner...
I've been doing this for 10 years.
Been doing it 10 years.
Yeah.
Have you had... I mean, I have had the privilege of working with some very, very capable people who are able to diagnose, and not necessarily, fortunately, I'm healthy. I've not had to very much interface with the medical system, but with others who can come to the essence of the problem very quickly. I mean, even...
It's not so much that, you know. I think that it's easy when someone comes in with a single problem that's, a relatively straightforward diagnosis. You know, I love it when somebody walks in with cluster headaches or walks in and says, my stomach hurts and I just don't feel like eating anymore and I'm not hanging out with my friends and I'm not sleeping well, and just lays out the diagnostic criteria for depression and says, I'm so sorry, I'm making it so hard for you and taking up all of your time. I mean, those people are easy. It's the, you know, the slow 75-year-old person with 8 medical problems for which I have 20 minutes and... they're slightly demented, and, you know, there are a lot of people like that, or young,
sure,
very well people with a lot of symptoms but no real illness. And
right, and when you're, you know, obviously when you are, part of the problem is simply the situation where you've got a person with 8 medical problems, but If you're told that you are the least efficient of all of the doctors, that suggests to me that you are that there are some efficiencies that perhaps you weren't going to do. So I'm going to just I'm not a doctor. I'm playing a doctor here on radio, but I'm going to pretend that I had the medical knowledge. And you tell me if there's any nuggets here that are of value. But the other thing before I even get to that, you need to find out who the most efficient doctor is.
Well, I share an office with her.
Okay. Has she watched you? Has she watched you do exams? Have you watched her do exams?
Yeah.
And what does she do?
She's very brusque, and she walks out.
I didn't ask you to be brusque, but is there a way you could not be brusque and still get to the essence? Let me pretend I'm a doctor. This is what I would do. I would, of course, have a very good, if possible, questionnaire that I would have sent in advance. And if the person was old and demented and couldn't fill it out, I would have somebody fill it out as well as possible.
Okay, good.
I would do that in advance, so I'm not wasting my 20 minutes with that.
Good.
I am looking, and I am not trying to solve everything in 20 minutes. Again, I've got this little voice in my shoulder saying, what is the best low-hanging? Where am I likely to yield the greatest benefit for the time allotted? If the if the dementia, let's say, we from a previous exam, we know that it is you know, X, cardiovascular dementia, et cetera, standard progression, the guy is old or whatever, I'm not going to put my time in there. But maybe he's got something that is going to be more open to treatment, and I'm going to pick my spots, and I'm going to say, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to focus on this. And then at the end of the 20 minutes, say, I'd love you to come back in 20 minutes so we can focus on that. I would not rush. I would not be brusque.
Yeah. Okay.
But be that combination. Now, is there anything in what I just said that might help you to become not the least efficient of all the docs?
No, I think what you're saying is really good. So what you're saying is really, really invest in establishing that agenda and then really stick to it.
Right, and the questionnaire is what can be really... Every one of my clients, before they come in, a new client, I send them a very probing new client questionnaire that takes them usually 2 hours to complete.
Yeah,
and they all bring it in, and you know, then I can look at... And I usually, if they're a phone... I have a lot of clients by phone and Skype these days. The half hour before my scheduled appointment, I am reading that, and I am... So I have initial... I can... calmly, without the pressure of the person there staring at me, that's my obsession in life, to be helpful, and I'm sure it is yours too, and hopefully this little phone call will help you be a little more successful.
Is there a way I can let you know?
Please call back. And there's never need to be brusque, and there's never need to rush. There's always a need to be time efficient, but never need to be brusque, and rushing is not good for your health or the patient's.
I agree with you. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks a lot for calling. I love when people call. This is my mission in life, is to help you. I am not a guy who's about work-life balance. I could spend every waking minute trying to help you. So for the phone number, if you'd like a three-minute workover, any kind of work-related problem, I can usually help. 415-841-4134. During the week, I get paid pretty well for doing it, but it is my honor to be doing it for you for free every Sunday. So 415-841-4134. 4134. Before I go back to the phones, I want to share a few more of those time management tips that I promised to share with you. Of course, telecommuting is invaluable, especially remember that the California master plan is to build no more freeways for the next 20 years. And the time it takes to take mass transit is usually double that of driving. Except if you're driving, there's no freeways, no more, there's gridlock, so that's going to take forever. If you can telecommute even one day a week, it can be a huge time saver. I have so many clients who are forced to go into work, and they're either sitting in gridlock on I-80, or they're in BART, and they got to drive to the BART station, they can't find a BART spot at BART, and they got to go park 9 blocks away, and then they got to wait for the BART, and they got to take the BART, and then they got to walk from BART to the... They're exhausted by the time they get to work. So telecommuting is a magical answer. Yes, I know you have distractions at home. You know, there is going to be tempting to watch TV or play with your kid or eat or go play sports or go chat with your friends. But if you can work at home and make yourself stay focused, telecommuting is a huge time and stress saver. It's for certain personalities, especially, it is very stressful to be going through all of that every day. You're feeling your life being wasted away, as I said, and all those steps to get to BART, to find parking at BART, to wait for the BART, to get off, to run, and then it's raining, and telecommuting avoids all of that. Okay, next tip. One of the major time sucks in the workplace is the meeting, especially standing meetings. You know, we're going to meet every Friday at X o'clock, or every even once a month, the first Friday of the month at X o'clock. And so much of those meetings is irrelevant to what you need for your work life. You know, somebody's agenda is very important to that person or whatever, but do you really need all? Most of it is usually not relevant. Can you get out of meetings? Can you be tactful enough? Remember, I need to say this. I think one of today's core workplace postulates, fundamental, foundational principles is it's better to be inclusive than to be efficient. And so you've got every, you know, you like, for example, in hiring, so many of my clients are looking for a job. So they will go and they're interviewed by six people or eight people. You know, this obsession with inclusion, even though it's grossly inefficient and too many cooks can indeed spoil the broth. You're going to be invited to lots of meetings, not because it's really time effective, because they're afraid of excluding you. They want to be participatory, collaborative, less hierarchical, flatter. But it can just be a huge time suck. So if there are meetings that you feel you would be better off not attending, if you would be add more value to your organization than not attend, ask your boss if you might be excused. And if you're the boss, really, as I said earlier, ask yourself, are all those standing meetings? I know that they build comradeship. I know they build inclusiveness. I know. But really ask yourself whether those goods are outweighed by the waste of time that so many people privately think that meetings are. That's not to say, by the way, I have a client who's a C-level person at a Fortune 50 company. And part of his agenda for the next 6 months is that he's going to have one-on-ones with each of his 10 key people. On a regular basis, on at least an every 2 week basis for 15 minutes. One-on-ones can be very potent because they are individualized. In the same way that I advocate tutoring as the best way to learn something rather than a class, certainly one-on-one meetings with the right people are certainly very useful. So I don't consider those generally poor uses of time. You know, you can't broad brush and say meetings are bad or one-on-ones are good. More often than not, I think we overvalue the meeting and undervalue the brief one-on-one. Okay. Let's go back to the phones. I'll give out the phone number. If you have either a question or a comment regarding time management, your time management, I loved that call from the doctor. That's exactly the kind of call I do well with. If you've got a problem, tell me about it. I want to help. Could be related to time management, or it could be related to any aspect of your work life, or even some more personal issue that is affecting your work life. I invite you to call for what I call a 3-minute career makeover or a workover. The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It is your turn on the air.
Hi, I'm sorry. I got disconnected last time.
Oh, good. Glad to have you back.
Yeah, thank you.
You're the three. For those people who are just joining us, she wanted a 3-minute career makeover. She's not sure. You were terminated as a counselor in your 50s. Is that right? Is that you?
Yeah, and I was terminated for something I didn't do. So my question is, going out and looking for another job, I've never been fired in my life. How do I talk about that, especially when it was something I didn't do?
Let's start with the truth. What are you accused of doing?
I'm a domestic violence counselor. I saw a client who had some concerns and around suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I did an assessment, and based on my assessment, the woman stated she was desperate, not suicidal.
Mm-hmm.
She actually wrote a note to that effect. So I was fired because I didn't go to the clinical director and say that and tell her that someone was suicidal. It was circle thinking because the woman wasn't suicidal. Mm-hmm. And it was actually the underlying thing is that there was a conflict, a personality conflict, mm-hmm. between the clinical director and myself that had been there for a year. And this was, I thought, an opportunity for her to really just let me go.
You know, I don't, it's very easy for, you know, people who are giving advice to sound holier than thou. But my gut says that in most cases, including this one, that a very crisp, brief, honest presentation, I would, this is not conventional wisdom. The conventional wisdom is to either lie or smooth it over in the interview process, but don't say anything up front. I think that these days, even with this bad economy, if you're looking for work, the first thing they're wondering is, if she's so good, why is she looking? So I think that your pitch almost has to acknowledge it up front, in your networking meetings, in your cover letters or whatever. So if I were, for example, writing a cover letter, I'd write the following. I have been a successful domestic violence counselor for 22 years. I have never had a bad experience. And in this case, I was let go. And absolutely unfairly. The policy is the official reason that was given is that I didn't report this woman as being suicidal when my professional judgment and even her own letter said she was not. But there was a long-standing personality conflict with my particular boss for the first time in my life, and she used that as an excuse. In this tough time, she can let go of anybody, and was looking for people to let go anyway. But that's the bad news. And here are the good news. And then I would immediately go from that crisp, completely honest presentation to a listing of what you bring to the table and why you are good and why the potential employer should at least interview you. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, it's been, I feel a lot of shame around it. It's really difficult to say, you know, to just kind of put my head around it. But yeah, I think just going up and being totally honest with it is probably the best thing.
Why is it difficult to wrap your head around it if, in the goddess's eyes, you really did nothing wrong?
I think it's hurtful. It's hurtful. It's made me question myself. I have friends.
Why? If you did nothing wrong, why? If you did nothing wrong, why does it make you question yourself?
I think just because I want to be sure, it's such a serious issue, I just want to be sure that I was correct, that I was right, that I didn't miss anything.
Okay, let's say you did.
I know I didn't, but, okay. You know, I just, this has never happened to me before, and I'm just trying to understand it.
Right, don't spend so much time understanding it. Just spend your time moving on. If, in fact, having explored it enough, you realize you did nothing wrong, or even, heaven forbid, you did, we are human. We all make mistakes. That does not mean that your punishment should be a lifetime of no employment and bag ladyhood. You need, even if you screwed up a bit, if you are partially, usually like in every car accident, usually both parties are somewhat at fault. Give yourself a break. You made a mistake, briefly cop to it, and move on. If you didn't make a mistake, say so. But the analysis paralysis, and counselors are the worst at this. They're the worst at this, and I think they disempower their clients because counseling encourages the analysis paralysis, but you're doing it yourself. You've done the analysis of it. You've thought about it reasonably. Move on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for the
really
call.
Does. Thank you so much.
I love it. My pleasure. Again, you, dear, thanks for the call. Dear listeners, if you have a problem, we've now had the two calls we had were a domestic violence counselor and a physician. I don't care if you're a clerk or a CEO, for-profit, non-profit. You got a career problem. My mission in life is to help you. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Before I go back to phones, just a couple more time management tips that I want to give you. Let's say you're not sure whether you're using time as well as you like. Like that first doctor who called, he didn't know whether he was doing everything wrong. He started out in the phone call. He started out saying, "I'm doing everything I can." And it takes all that time to understand what the problem is. But by the end of the 3-minute phone call, he realized he was not using his time effectively. He was trying to cover everything in one exam. He was not giving them an advanced questionnaire. So if you're not sure you're doing time as well as you like, either get somebody to watch you who is more efficient or log your activities, like on a memo pad or into your cell phone. Every time you change tasks, write the time and what you're starting to do. And at the end of the day, review your log. After a day or two, you may see some things you might want to change. And certainly getting observed by somebody who is more time efficient is helpful. I mean, that's what I do with a lot of my clients. When my clients tell me that they are lousy time managers, I have them walk me through their day. And then, like this doctor, if I sense that maybe he or she is not using the time that efficiently, I'll demonstrate how I might do it myself. Because just some people are just not time conscious. Just like I'm a terrible artist. I can't do it. If I needed an artist, I would hire somebody because I just can't do it. I'm not going to learn to do it. Some people are just lousy time managers, and they need somebody to point out in simple baby steps what they need to do differently so they can do a better job managing their time. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. I work for a small nonprofit in the city, and I love your tips about time management, and a lot of my work is actually project management. So, you know, being efficient with your time is a really big deal, and mm-hmm. I sort of am a very systematic person anyway. Mm-hmm. But what do you do when your boss has a problem with time management? For example, we have a boss that I feel like I'm constantly managing, and I've worked with her for about 3 years now, and she's the executive director, so she's big picture, like big dream, which is great. But, you know, a meeting, she's throwing out all kinds of irrelevant things and kind of running off into new topics, and shiny, bright, new is kind of more her style, you know what I mean? And I'm just constantly struggling with how to push back. You know, I've created my own scope of work. I'm constantly working on my job description, sort of checking back with her, but it's like weekly. It's weekly that I get sort of irrelevant, sort of off topic. And I just, it's so frustrating. It's exhausting. And I don't feel like I'm managing it as well as I could be.
The answer there is, you know, in the Serenity Prayer, God grant me the wisdom to know between the difference between what I can and can't change. You're not going to change her. People who are not detail-oriented and are always big picture and just ideas, you as the employee especially, you're going to only get yourself fired and exhausted by trying to turn a sow's, whatever it is, a sow's ear into a silk purse. That's who she is. You know, you need to filter out if she's throwing out 10,000 ideas. She's not that enough of a follow-through person that she's expecting all of them to get done. Really find out, either if you know already through your intuition or because you worked with her for years, either ask her or say, okay, I know what really is important here. The rest of this is her trying to show off how smart she is or how to hide the fact that she's lazy and not really going to follow through. So she comes, throws out a bunch of ideas. Whatever it is your senses about her, say, accept her as a given. It's like a spouse. You know, if you try to change your spouse fundamentally, you're going to be frustrated. You're not going to change anything. You can tune around the edges. You know, it's like a TV set. You can never turn a black and white set into a color set, but you may be able to fine-tune the reds, blues, and greens. The same with her. You're getting exhausted, and you're risking your job and your health trying to change this woman who's probably not going to change. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Right. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi. My issue is the antithesis of everyone else's. I have too much time.
Okay, yes, I know people like that. Okay.
And I have a part-time job, and I have other interests that I can pursue, and I am pursuing, but what I really want to do is get a job that uses my intellect more. And, and so I am not doing it. And it just brings me back to your original comment about having a master plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's find something. You say, now, use your intellect. There are different kinds of intellect. Take 20 or 30 seconds to give me an insider's look at your intellect. What is it like? What is it like? Are you an engineer? Are you an artist? Are you a people person? Are you an intuitive? Who are you? In what context would you love, the heck with how you used it or didn't use it in the past, at this stage in your life moving forward, what aspects of your intellect do you want to use?
Quirky ideas. I've done research. I now work with obese children, and which can get tough after a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same issue.
Sure.
So something that uses my experience with people, my knowledge, even though I have a master's without a PhD, but I've been around a while, and I'd love to do something that would incorporate that, and I haven't a clue.
Okay. Well, tell me who you're best describe, not the names, but describe what kind of people you naturally attract to, their age, their intellectual style, what they do for fun. Give me a sense of the people you're most likely to, because those are the people you're most likely to best work with, too. Tell me about those people, who you connect with best.
Younger people, like in their late 30s, early 40s, that have a sense of who they are, but yet are still, they're not jaded, and they're quirky. I am not a run-of-the-mill person. I like offbeat, and my life has been like that. Very responsible, but I used to park cars. I've done sports that are unusual. So I'm different that way.
Okay.
And, yeah. So
let's play a little game. What's your first name?
Tess.
Tess, we're going to create a test meter, and test meter goes from 0 to 10. With 0 means the idea makes you puke, and 10 means it gives you ecstasy.
Okay.
So what does the idea of working in a off in an alternative bookstore, what is that score on the meter?
6.
What keeps it from being a 10?
I read, but not a whole bunch.
Okay, an art store, a art store in San Francisco.
That would be fun. I'm not an artist, but I create things.
What number does that score in the meter?
About the same, 7 maybe.
7. What keeps it from being a 10?
Just my lack of artistic background.
Okay, what is your background? What kind of things do you do? What have you done before that might give us a clue as to where you might find yourself using that quirky intellect of yours?
My interests are many, but I like to knit. I propagate roses. I am athletic, but don't go to a gym anymore. I like to help people solve problems around their lifestyle, meaning that the families that I work with have real issues around.
Okay, what if I said, let's say I want you to work at Curves. Curves is a place for older women, basically, who are trying to get fitter. You've been athletic. You were working with obese children. What if I said I want you to get a job at Curves, helping them motivate and using a more quirky approach to helping people in their 30s to their 70s become more fit?
Yeah, I've actually kind of thought of that. And somehow getting the kids together, the big kids together with the big adults. I know they do that with learning.
Okay, because here's my fine, because we're just about out of time. My tip. I would like you to try an experiment.
Okay.
I would like you to invite either to your apartment, or if your apartment is yucky, the community room at some, church or at a community center or whatever. Invite 2 adults who are fat and 2 kids who are fat, and lead a discussion about how that might help with each other. That might be a baby step toward getting an idea about what you might do either on your own, working with them, for pay, for volunteer, or then Curves or whatever. Does that make sense?
Very good idea.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemko.
Thank you.
And that is the show for this week. My thanks to my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course to all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do 3-minute workovers on callers, and I'll talk with Rick Newman. He's the author of Rebounders, How Winners Pivot from Setbacks to Success. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemko reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.